Now on UK Health Radio, treat yourself to an upgrade. Pack away your low self-esteem. Leave behind that empty feeling. Stow your fears and doubts in the overhead locker. And go from stress to authentic success with Danielle Sachs.
Welcome to another show. I am so excited to talk to you today because, first of all, it is the month of March. And March is for me always a change in energy. It has been a long winter. I'm not sure wherever you are in the world, but in this part of the world, we are going into spring shortly. And I can't wait to change energy because we need a bit of sun. We need a bit of good oxygen and go outside and have a little walk in nature, but with that warmth, that sun, that beautiful energy guiding us. And I just want to say to you, it is the month of my birthday, and I always take my birthday, the day of my birth, very seriously. I am blessed and grateful that I'm still enjoying this beautiful life, that I can really, I am so grateful for being alive, for breathing, for having the opportunity to live my best life. And so my birthday is always very special to me. I do little things that, little quality things that for me have meaning, are fueling me, are really lifting me up. And I'm not sure yet what I'm going to do, but I can assure you that the month of March is always for me a change of energy. And probably you can maybe even feel it in my voice that today I'm like, this is like a new day, a new show. I have another beautiful expert to, you know, to talk to. I'm actually really excited. And whether you listen to the UK Health Radio platform, which is such a beautiful international, beautiful expert kind of info educational platform to give you the strength and the info and the education and inspiration to take your health seriously and to be responsible for it. Or whether you're listening to the podcast platform, then thank you anyway, whether it's radio or podcast, thank you for listening in. There is also the UK Health Radio magazine, which is called Health Triangle Magazine. The month of March has, again, a beautiful, I have to say, a beautiful designed magazine with lots of information on all sorts of things. And I encourage you, if you have not yet done that, to really go and look in the website and buy some of these issues because they are really out of this world. So today I am excited because I have Dr. Tennyson Lee. Now he is a consultant psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, and he is just really for me an expert in personality disorder. He is an honorary senior lecturer at the Barts Hospital, but also the co-director of the Center for Understanding of Personality. Within his role, he has written extensively over, I think, more than 40 publications, and he teaches on the treatment of personality disorder in China, in Europe, in South Africa, so all over the world. And on top of that, he also trained in public health. So I am sure that we're going to have a beautiful, authentic, inspiring conversation on personality and personality disorder and everything that has to do with it. So I am so looking forward to this conversation. I'll be back to you in a few minutes. Bye-bye for now.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to all of you. And as I said in the intro, thank you so much, Dr. Tennyson Lee, for accepting this interview and welcome.
Thanks very much, Daniel. I'm really pleased to be able to meet with you and to think about this really important aspect of all of us, really, of our lives, really.
Yes, indeed. And stress is a big thing these days in our lives. And so can you tell me, like a personal question, what has been your biggest stress in your life that has maybe led to who you are today?
Gosh, that's a big question. Maybe one of them has been leaving my native country where I was born, South Africa, and coming to the UK, both the thinking about the leaving of the country, which I very much love, and then also getting, needing to assimilate into a new country, really.
Yes. I can really recognize myself in that. I don't know if you know, but I lived in South Africa for about almost 11 years. Yeah. So we took the family with, you know, two kids over there, lived there for almost 11 years and came back with three children. So one is, you know, born in South Africa. So what would you say has helped you to overcome that stress, like to get used to be in the UK and to settle there, and to what has helped you?
I think it's coming over with a background, an upbringing that I have from my, you know, early years. I also think it's having a family. And having a sense of what I'm trying to do in a new society. So I think all of those provide some kind of structure, which I think is important for all of us to have, really, both history and present structures and a forward gaze of what are we trying to do.
I love that. So how did you discover your passion, your purpose? Because being the doctor who you are, the consultant psychiatrist, the psychoanalyst, you are so many, you know, you have accomplished so many things. What do you think happened there? How did you become that? What is your passion there?
I think it's partly, you know, growing up in apartheid South Africa, I think it would make someone just have a sense of wanting to do something which is reparative. When I was in secondary school, my mother became very ill, and I spent a lot of time in the hospital just visiting. And again, that sense of wanting to have abilities to help someone, I think, became more acute in that period.
Wow. Wow, that's actually quite a, I think that's very recognizable for many. We often live sometimes in our younger years, a crisis or a drama, whether it's someone being alcoholic, being someone very ill, losing someone, and then we go into that journey and become who we are. Now, I believe you are specialized in personality disorder. Now, let's talk a little bit about that, because I know that somebody is listening now who is either having someone with personality disorder or not having that diagnosis yet or not really knowing what it is. Can you explain a little bit in the mental health, you know, society and the mental health direction? What is a personality disorder?
No, I think it's a really important question. And in some ways, I'd actually extend your question into just normal society. What is personality really? Because personality disorder has been, there's good news in that there's present increased understanding that it's not as though personality disorder is just one thing. It's a dimensional aspect. In other words, you and I all have personalities.
Yes.
We all have personality traits, and a way to think about what doctors mean when they use the term disorder is that what they mean is there's some traits that the individual has which are just so accentuated, so strong, that often it leads to difficulties either for the individual themselves or for those around them. Now, if you think about it in that way, that we all have personality traits, it's just that some are very strong. That may be a way to reduce the stigma which society attaches to, oh, this term, personality disorder. It's personality, really. It's strong personalities at times, strong traits.
Could you compare it to, for example, an anxiety disorder, that we all have anxiety, and a disorder is when it's the anxiety becomes too strong? Would that be, is that comparable? Is that what you're trying to explain, or is it different?
I think that's a very good example. That, for example, you know, you and I, if we have an important meeting at 12, we'd be a bit anxious. Is the transport working?
Yes.
Now, that's a normal anxiety. And I suppose we would then look at the timetable and check, you know, are the trains running? If someone is overcome with anxiety, then they won't be able to sleep last night because they're so worried, and they'll be checking the timetables now, or saying, should I go by taxi? Should I take the bus? You know, all kinds of, and that would, it would just be an excessive amount of anxiety. Yes. That's why I think it's very useful to think of it as a dimensional concept.
Yes, I agree. Thank you for that. So explain to us a personality disorder. When do we, do doctors make that diagnosis? When is the decision to put, because I often say those things are sometimes like an etiquette that you put on your head. That's the diagnosis. That's, when do you actually diagnose a person with a personality disorder?
So again, I'll take it back to just thinking about personality. If you think about personality, a way to think about it, it's the way that we get through life. It's the coping mechanisms that we have for life. And the way that that's shown is the ways that we normally think, the ways that we normally have, you know, experience our emotions. It's the way we behave. And all of that relates to how we have our relationships, in a way. Now, if there are set patterns in the way the person either thinks or feels or behaves, which impact so much on either themselves in terms of leading them to feel miserable or unhappy, or affects those around them to a large extent, then that becomes what doctors would start thinking is a disorder. It's when they're suffering related to our personalities, that then psychiatrists or doctors would start thinking, is this then a disorder?
Yes. So the suffering part is a big one, whether it's for yourself or for people around you.
Absolutely.
If I understand well.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's well explained. I really like that. So what do you think, to go from a person who is, what, like we talked about, anxious, who has a disorder from what kind? So many disorders are going on, I think, in this society. There are so many things that people, you know, what is the norm? What is the normal these days, you know, in a society like this, where there's 24-hour availability, where there's always pressure, always speed, or, you know, so what would you say can change someone from feeling, you know, like we said, stressed or overdrive or overwhelm or even leading to a disorder, to getting out of that and going into life feeling content and fulfilled? What would you say is the journey to go on for someone?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And I think a way to think about it is, I think what influences is partly the attitude that the individual has towards them feeling anxious. Because if the individual has the attitude of feeling willing to take perspective on what the anxiety is about, and to think that they might have some ability to manage that anxiety, that's very different to an individual who feels, oh, this is so overwhelming, I can't do anything about it. And you can then think that what makes that individual able to do that? It's partly genetics.
Is it?
Partly the early upbringing of the individual. And it's partly what structures are in society which help the individual to be able to manage these different aspects. So I think there are a number of factors involved in what then, and then I suppose in terms of what's in society, it might be what structures are there within the health system that might help individuals at times when they are unable to manage it themselves.
But
all these four factors, because it's not just the health system. That's the important point.
I like that. So what you're saying is the structure in society on how people are getting help to do this? Is that what we're talking about? Okay.
But you see,
because you are also in public health and in health services involved, if I believe. So what is there a big thing?
But just to take it back down, in a way, you see, I think it's more than just society or the health service helping. It's also the individual's early upbringing.
Yes, of course.
Have they had a parent that has loved and respected them so that they've got a sense of themselves where they feel loved, that there's a fairness which they can expect and anticipate? And that early experience provides resilience for the individual in adversity so that they can have some sense of themselves that they can manage. Now, you know, many, particularly patients in my service that I see, haven't had the fortune of that early experience.
I agree.
They haven't had the scaffolding in which to be able to manage difficult circumstances. You know, that's very, very difficult.
I agree. Have you had that in your life? Have you experienced that love and respect in your upbringing? And is that why you feel that it is so important?
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, to have been fortunate enough to have parents that I feel, you know, were thinking about my welfare, were interested in me. That's in a way, that's just a fortune that we as individuals either have in our early lives, or you know, so many individuals lack that good fortune. Really.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I see it in my practice every day, Dr. Tennyson, that, you know, it all comes back to those first 10, 12 years of our lives where we have been seen, heard, understood, feeling of belonging, feeling of, yeah, of I'm worthy. It's all about that, isn't it? So, so thank you for that. So what do you believe that makes us feeling content then? Is that a big part of it? How you lived your first life, or today, let's say today, somebody's listening to this interview and says, well, it's all easy to say, but how do I, you know, what does it take to make me a person that can feel content, fulfilled? How do you achieve that?
I mean, I think that's, you know, that's the million dollar question, isn't it? What you've said. And I think that it finally goes back to biology. And I appreciate that in a way this, you know, our talk is not about going into the deep science. But what I do want to say is that our biology, our brains, they have different emotional systems in them.
Mm-hmm.
There are seven different emotion systems. Now, the reason why I'm stating that number is that those emotional systems all in some ways compete with one another.
Mm.
Now, if one realizes that going through life is managing that competition,
mm-hmm.
or that conflict, mm-hmm. that then means that when you and I as individuals have a problem, it's needing to realize that we need to sort it out.
In the brain.
Manage that conflict. Well, in the brain, well, when we say brain, we're talking about emotions as well. We have
yes.
to implement emotions.
Yes, the mind, yeah.
So I think that's the important thing. And that's why we're saying if the individual has been lucky enough to have had an early environment where they are more able to manage all these different tensions, then they're better equipped.
Yes.
To then sort out their lives in a way where they reach a sense of having managed the conflict. I'm trying to avoid the word contentment because contentment sounds a bit too glib.
Mm.
Sounds quite like happiness. I don't mm-hmm. mean that. I mean that one can, it's almost as though, I think maybe if we think about, say, you and I, if we've had, an argument with our loved one, mm-hmm. and we've really said what we think and listened to one another and then worked out something. In a way, that's what the individual needs to do. They need to manage something which is a tension, which is a conflict, and work it through. Now, I think that if the individual hasn't had that experience early in their lives, they either might not feel able to do it, or they may feel it's their responsibility because life has been so unfair that they might feel that they need to be given more space in which to do it, and they don't get to managing the tension or the conflict. That's what's difficult. That's the challenge for each of us as human beings, really, in terms of our development, having to manage the tension.
Are we talking then about the reactivity that somebody, you know, explodes, you know, the explosion, the reaction instead of the response? Is that what you're saying? Instead of being able to manage a response and think about how am I going to respond to this instead of being reactive?
That's such an important point, Daniel, that you're raising, because the reactive is the immediate response.
Yes.
It's a bit like, say, you and I learned how to play tennis, but we haven't learned well. And so we keep on doing the wrong stroke because that's just what we've learned. It becomes an instinct. So it's that reactive part, which I think is so important. And we just that, in a way, if the individual has been unlucky enough to have had not a good childhood, they've been almost trained to do the wrong reflex.
Yes. And so also they had the example, isn't it? Is it because we copy so much? So they had, if they had an example of reactivity and explosion and aggression and how not to communicate, but to then that's what they copy, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, that they've had, how do we as young children learn? We learn from our parents.
Yes.
So absolutely is that. So that's the one point that you've made. But the other thing that you've said, which I think is important, is you've said thinking. Now, I think that often when we talk about thinking, it's not really thinking as in being able to problem solve. If you and I think at times when we've been in a difficult parts of our lives, we might have thought that we're thinking, but we're just thinking the same thoughts. We go around in a circle.
Yes. Yeah?
Now, real thinking, or thinking which deals with tension or conflict, is one which does realize there is a conflict and actually works it through. It doesn't just go through the same, oh, it's unfair, or I don't know how to do it.
It starts with awareness. Is that what you're saying? Like being aware.
Yes, it's being aware, and it goes back to having some sense of accepting there is a tension, there is a conflict. I'm going to need to make a decision where there's some loss, there's some gain. It's not going to be all perfect. It's that ability to look at reality, which is important for us to reach this word that I'm not wanting to use, contentment, but some sense of just feeling okay about things.
I agree. So what can we do to be in that different state? Does it start with that awareness?
I think it does. And I think when you say what can we do, I think the one thing is that it needs some time to realize it and to think about it more and to work it through. And when I say think about it, it's not just thinking. It's actually starting to, once you've worked out something, to try to change some of the things that you do. It's so important that we live lives which are not just in our heads. We do things every day. And it's all trying to adapt what we do. So I'm trying to think with you at a very practical level. This isn't just theory in a way.
So are you saying also to change your perception? The quote of Wayne Dyer, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Is that a little bit what you're saying? To change your perception on how you see this and change your thinking on that?
Sure. So it's that. And there are two things I want to build into the change in perception. The one is that it takes time. I think so. Sometimes I'll see a patient who comes to my service who says, "Oh, but doctor, I've also got this important work, or I've got this important study, and I can't invest the time in the therapy that you're offering. I need to." Can you see it? In a way, that individual then may not be looking at the tension, all these competing needs, and trying to, stay in the same, maybe in the same pattern. So it's investing the time. But the other thing is that our thoughts, our behaviors, and our emotions, they're all linked in the brain. So in other words, it's very important that we realize it's not that, how does one alter perception, or how does one alter thinking? It's also linked to changing actual behavior patterns. So it's all, it's because I think the difficulty is that, sometimes my patients say to me, "Doctor, just show me how to think differently." If I can think differently, then I can control my emotions. Yes. The brain doesn't work in that way, because in fact, the emotions are the very powerful aspect that needs to be worked on. I'm sure you could recognize it. When your emotions are very strong, you can't think really.
That's true. And
that's need to realize the limitations of just trying to control things through thinking.
So what is your advice to someone listening now who really has been desperate to change that state and who wants to feel a little bit more content, even just a first step? What would you say is a good, or how would you say to take the time and to start seeing things differently in a different perspective? Is that what you would advise them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good question, and you're making me think now in terms of that question. What would, and I was saying, say someone asked me that, I would say spend some time not doing what you usually do. In other words, to provoke your mind to think. So in other words, if you're usually very busy, then try to take off a weekend where you're doing your usual things to allow your mind to think and not go along the programmed way. Then if you're fortunate enough to have a loved one, or so a friend or someone in the family, to ask them, some of the questions that you might be having, which is leading you to have this review. and then to consider speaking to a professional.
I agree. Who asks you questions and who gives you the tools to see things differently, maybe. Yeah.
And if we can remove the anxiety, oh, I must be very sick to go and speak to a counselor or a therapist or a doctor. It's not about that. It's saying, look, it's a bit like if you have the opportunity to speak to someone with more experience who has thought about these issues before, why not use that opportunity?
I agree.
It's almost as though if we can change to thinking, we have this amount of years on Earth, how do I make the most of it? My pleasure and satisfaction in it. Oh, there's this and this person I can speak to, has some expertise, experience, who can help me with that. That might be a way to destigmatize going to health services in a way.
I love what you say there, because it makes me think of what you said earlier around tennis, to play tennis. Why would you try to improve your tennis game on your own and not ask somebody who knows exactly how to play tennis? And I'm not saying we as professionals know exactly, but we can guide you to, you know, to improve your game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see the in terms of what you've just said now, the issue about personality is that it's been developed over many years. We are all experts at our own coping mechanism.
Yes.
Yeah. So you might not realize what your coping mechanism is, and you might not realize that that in itself is what leads to difficulties.
Yes.
But your example is a very nice one, because you then pose a challenge to our listeners, and that is, listener, if you have some example where you keep on doing the same thing, and you keep on thinking, I'm going to keep on doing it, and I won't speak to someone else about it, that might itself be a clue that there may be something which is worthwhile thinking about with another person. That's a very good example that you've given.
Yeah. And for what I feel, for example, you're talking about the time, taking the time, you know, to provoke yourself and about what's going on. So many people say to me, yeah, but I don't have the time to do this. I don't have the time to do the breathing exercises, to meditate, to reflect, to take my gratitude journal. If you don't have the time, then you are just a person who needs to take the time. That's what I always say, because time is our biggest asset. And if we don't even take the time to improve our own mind, our own reasoning, our own attitude, our own behavior, our own thinking patterns, that's where the problem starts already, isn't it?
I absolutely agree with you, because, you know, to also say that as a psychoanalyst, I go to my own analysis, and that's an investment. That's a huge investment. But it's to say that if you invest the time, you do get, it does help you to lead your life in a way which is more, gets to the important things, gets to grips with things more, you know, but it does take time. That's the investment. I think it goes back to the earlier part of the conversation.
Yes, yes, I agree. So, is there any quote statement? It's a question that I ask often in my shows to experts like you, people like you have not just expertise, but experience, I always say. You know, you've lived a life your way. Is there anything to say to the person who's listening today? Is there any quote, statement, value that you live by that you would like to give to the audience?
Gosh, Daniel, thanks. That's such a good question. When I say it now, it'll be just saying it off the cuff, because I haven't. But to me, it would be
more spontaneous, the better.
To me, it's about, if I could speak to my fellow human being, really, to say, you know, accept that there are tensions and there are conflicts. But there's something so wonderful about us as human beings that even with the most adversity in our early lives, there is something in us as human beings where we do have an ability, even if it's a small ability, to manage those tensions or those conflicts. That, you know, I've worked with so many individuals, and I have no doubt about that quality in us as human beings, which is very moving and, you know, very powerful. Really.
Yes. Wow. And also, it's often that adversity that leads us to be the authentic person that we need to be, to follow our purpose, to follow our passion. I often see it, and I see it in myself. I mean, when you see my story, I'm here today because of that story, because of that illness that really, you know, made me flat on my back for a long, long time, where doctors told me I would never be able to walk a flight of stairs again, you know, and probably be in a wheelchair. And that force, like you talk about now, that ability to overcome that has made who I am today. So thank you for that. So any other advice, like another step to get into that purpose and to overcome that challenge and that adversity? What is the first step to overcome it for you?
I think it's what you've said now, because I think the patients that I meet who don't do so well are the ones who remain locked in the past. They remain fixed.
That's a good one.
One can think what has happened is absolutely unfair and should not have happened. And then if one says, and what can I do now?
Yes.
That ability to think, and what can I do now with the rest of my life or my life? And I think that's a very important way to try to manage the early experiences that, you know, some people have had, which has been just so, you know, should not have happened, some of these experiences that, you know,
some of them are horrific things and really dramas, you know, to anyone. And we all have had those dramas, some smaller, some bigger. And it is really so. A last question, maybe to go back to personality disorder. So is it so that what you're saying, if there's a big drama and a big thing that happened in the early years, that can lead to personality disorder? Would you link that to that, or is it more to do also with genetics, with what you said? Is it a complex kind of thing, or does it have to do with the traumas or the things that we live in our early lives?
You see, that question that you've asked now would be enough material for a conference, really, because there's also been new diagnoses which have been made, for example, complex post-traumatic stress disorder,
yes,
and linking that with personality disorder. I think that one can think that if one has a profound event which has happened, that can have long-standing effects on personality. But I think that I think it's more useful for us to think of personality or personality difficulties, not with those dramatic examples,
okay,
but more with the commonplace, ways of raising children which have not been optimal. I think that's a far more important one for us in society, because you could think about then that captures.
You mean the daily education, like the daily life of education, how a child has been responded to, how a child has been grown up into? Yeah, I agree, actually. That is certainly as important.
Because then that makes us as society need to think about all of us.
Yes.
Not just, and, you know, it's, of course, you know, the importance of thinking about, people that have gone through dreadful events, of course, that's very important to attend to. But in a way, it's not to forget just us ordinary members of society and the need to attend to us as citizens of, you know, this country or of the world, really. How do we best, you know, create or think about how we structure society so that people can lead these more fulfilled lives, really.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree. Thank you so much for that. Is there a last word you want to share with anyone listening? One word, one sentence that you want to share? I think you shared already so much, and thank you for that. It was really interesting conversation. But is there one little sentence or one word would you would like to add?
I think it's best to think that there are things, having a life which is satisfying is worth really fighting for, even if it's sacrifice of time, needing to do some very difficult decisions. It's I think it, I would just hope that all of us would have that ability to make that changes.
And you and I, we are both people who are trying to help others to achieve that, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you so much for this conversation. I'm going to have a little break and come back just now. Thank you so much, Dr. Tennyson.
And thanks very much for inviting me onto the program. Delighted to speak to you.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar good.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Wow, we are back. And how did I enjoy this conversation? First of all, we both, and I could feel it from the moment I interviewed him, that we had both that South African accent. So I was so happy to hear that he had grown up in South Africa in the time of apartheid, and how that made him really actually was a part of his life, and how the hospital visits with his mother changed his whole perspective and made him into the man that he is today. But what I mostly was inspired by is how he looks at our personality and the personality disorder. So interesting that how strong the personality can be. It can be so strong that it actually leads to disorder, to difficulties. And we need to stop indeed the stigma of personality disorders, of mental illness and mental health in the whole complex subject and topic. There was a real insight for me about how it all has to do with and the genetics and the upbringing and the structure in society and how we learn to manage daily life. Now, that upbringing, we already talked about that a few times in the show, on how the first 10, 12, 15 years of our lives can determine the rest of our lives in that way, that the parents really, if we had parents and surroundings, environment, it doesn't need to be parents if you only had one or even none. But if you have grown up in an environment where you were loved, where you were respected, the research has shown that that gives you a base of resilience for adversity. And so, of course, the million-dollar question I asked them about how, what can we do to achieve that feeling of content? Isn't that what we all want, a sort of being fulfilled in life? And I found it very interesting that he was talking, as I talk in my practice a lot to people, about the difference between being resilient and a self-management, so that instead of being reactive, you are able to respond. Responsibility is the ability to respond, not to be reactive, not to go in conflict, not to go in tension, but to the ability to respond. And that, of course, is all linked together with our thinking. And he talks about real thinking. Now, I find that quite interesting because most of us are on autopilot. We don't really think. One of my mentors years ago told me that there was only 1% of the people, of the adults, who really think in life. We are so brainwashed and conditioned by advertising, by our conditions in our upbringing, by TV, whatever it is, we are conditioned and we are brainwashed and thinking in certain patterns on autopilot. So of course, like Dr. Tennyson was saying, the awareness is so important and you need invest time in that to have that awareness, to do the reflection on how you in your own brain, in your own mind, in your own life, how you are managing yourself. So it is really important to invest in seeking help. And I really like the fact that I was comparing it because he was talking about tennis game and I was comparing this seeking help, the same thing. If you learn a sport, whatever it is, whether it is tennis, whether it is gymnastics, whether it is just learning to swim, like my five-year-old grandson, you need help to do that. Why not ask an expert? And so I said so many times in so many articles, and seeking help is not a weakness. It is so, so essential for you and for me that we need to actually really accept help and accept our, as Dr. Tennyson was saying, accept the tensions in our life, the conflicts in our life, and go and have a different perspective on it. It's all about changing your perspective. So what can you do? Accept the tensions and the conflicts, because as human beings, we have the ability to manage adversity. We are born with a coping mechanism that is much stronger than sometimes we believe. It's all about our belief system of what we can manage, of what we can have as goals, what we can achieve in authentic success. It's all about our belief system. And it really helps if you have guidance in that, to look at it, to look at your beliefs, your convictions, your reality, your assumptions, all those things. It really helps. And so I was really pleased that Dr. Tennyson Lee gave us a few insights, a few examples that really have done something with me. I have to admit that I'm really interested and intrigued to talk with him maybe in a few months' time also about the post-traumatic stress syndrome, because it's all related. The trauma, the upbringing, the conflicts, everything that we have had in our younger years is so, so determining how we are managing our life today. And with help, with guidance, whatever your upbringing was, you can better your life. You can be the best version of yourself. And the more authentic, the more vulnerable you're going to be, the more your journey towards authentic success will be open for you. So I am going to leave you with that for today. I am looking forward to talk to you again next week. Bye-bye for now.
From Stress to Authentic Success was presented by Danielle Sachs. Join Danielle at the same time next week here on UK Health Radio. And meanwhile, for more on how to thrive in business and everyday life by being true to yourself, go to daniellesachs.com.